Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Mac, and you're listening to Mac's Musings. My guest today is Fernando de la Cruz. And hopefully this thing is going to be calling him. Ah, there we go. We will be talking to him shortly. Hopefully. And hopefully you won't just listen to a phone ring.
Hello?
Hello, Fernando. This is Mac.
Hello, this is Fernando. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. And you?
I'm doing quite well. How about you? Oh, you want me to go back and forth. All right.
That's okay. Yeah, we're on the air, just so you know. Live on the air. And so
nice.
We'll just go ahead and get started. So how's the weather over
there
in Pittsburgh?
It's kind of cold. You know, it makes no sense because, like, you go outside, it's like, hey, sunshiny day, but then you have to go out with a jacket. And I'm like, well, figure out what you want. It's like that one person you see at a drive-thru, and it's like you're just sitting there for, like, 5 hours because they're trying to figure out what they want. That's our weather. It doesn't know what it wants to be.
Our weather here in Ohio is pretty much the same. It's like one day it's 30, the next day it's 80. And yesterday it was 67, but it wasn't a nice 67. It was like coolish and everybody's wearing jackets because it really didn't feel like 67. It felt more like 40.
Oh, wow.
And we'll go day to day, like literally. And then sometimes even the same day, it might be like just this morning, earlier in the morning, like in a wee hours of the morning, it was 30 exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's 60.
Yeah, that's
so
what
I
we've been getting like over here. Like it'd be like it's ironic because like over here, it's like we get beautiful days. Yeah, beautiful days in April. It's like it's starting to get hot. It was 70s, 80s. I'm like, oh, cool. No more winter. No more thinking about getting colder, slipping, sliding in the rain. And all of a sudden, it's, May? I think it's April. It's May now. And now all of a sudden, you see rain showers every day. So I feel like I'm in London. It's like you have to walk around with an umbrella these days because it'd be all – I mean, it looks cinematic outside. It looks cool. But then it's rainy and whatnot. It's like, oh, I can't even play outside anymore. You know, it's like depressing. But now it's like a sunshiny day, but who knows for how long. So.
I mean, it's weird because like just either last week or the week before, we didn't exactly have snow, but we actually did. But it was like in balls. It was like somebody was throwing snowballs from the sky. But they were small. They were little pellets. And they got a name for that, but who cares what the name for it
is. Oh,
a
hail? You mean hail?
No, it wasn't hail.
Oh,
no, okay. It was snowballs. Because you can tell the difference because regular old hail isn't white. And
true,
doesn't
true,
look
true.
Like a snowball. These were little white pellets, and they looked like snowballs. And they weren't, you know, smooth or anything either. And when they hit the ground, they spread out and look like snow. So, no, that's not regular hail. I mean, that's just snow that was coming down that got a little extra frozen and a little extra wet. But they do have a technical term for it. And to be perfectly honest, I don't care what the technical term is.
I got you.
I just call it snowballs. So getting off of the weather, have you always lived in Pittsburgh or have you lived anywhere else?
So originally I'm from New Jersey, Union, New Jersey. That's where I was born. And then we moved up here to Pennsylvania where my father, when he was still around, he had a job opportunity up here. So we moved up here to Bethlehem, PA. And then wherever he's at, he can whatever. But then we moved from Bethlehem to Latrobe. Latrobe, Pennsylvania. Reason why is because my little brother has a PDD, and a lot of his medical staff was more in Westmoreland County. So that's why we moved up to Westmoreland or Latrobe, whatever. And then I was freelancing at the time, starting from 2019 to 2023 now. So 2021. I'm not counting 2020 because that was a lockdown, but I did freelance at that time. But so let's say like 2019 to 2021. And at that time, I was coming up to Pittsburgh 3 to 4 days a week. And it was a one-hour drive to Pittsburgh and a one-hour drive to go back home. So it was 3 to 4 days a week, and that was a crap ton of gas. So I decided to move up here in Pittsburgh because of that, and I've been here since 2021, around the summer of 2021 or fall of 2021 to now.
Well, that's a good reason to move, is to save yourself an hour, well, actually 2 hours back and forth.
Right. And then also because around the exact time when I was moving up here, I had a job opportunity, which now I work for Channel 4. So it was a smooth transition because I used to work at Starbucks as my day job. And then all of a sudden I had a connection. I had someone that's been watching me since the very beginning. She gave a good word in for me on Channel 4. And that's how I got the job. So right when I was moving, I got my interview and I got the job at Channel 4. So it was a blessing. Like, it was right at the exact time when I was moving. So now it's like, now I can travel from where I live at. It's like 10 minutes away from Channel 4. So it works out.
Wow. That is way cool. Now, is Channel 4 the place that you're a photojournalist?
Yes. That's where, it's a news station. I'm a photojournalist. So I do a lot of the, camera work that you see when you see like on live television. That's the person, whoever is behind that camera, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of work though. It's not easy, but it pays the bills. So, you know, and plus it's better than being at the office, because in the beginning I was an editor from 3 a.m. to 11 a.m. or 10 a.m. And those hours were brutal because I had to get up. It messed up with my sleeping cycle, but then I got a little better at it, but then I had an opportunity to be a photojournalist, or I'll work from 3:30 to 11:30. I'm like, oh, wow, I can actually sleep. Okay, cool. So that's how I got the job at being a photojournalist. And plus, it beats being inside office. So I do a lot of traveling and in our vehicles. So a lot of the work that I do, it's in the news car. It's usually me, and I work with a reporter, unless I'm by myself. Not as I intend, I'm with a reporter, and we're both doing the next story. So.
Oh, that is so cool. And so you at least like to travel, though, right?
Yes, I do love to travel. The only thing that gets the catch is, I love traveling. I've always loved. I've always been that type of person that can't stand still. Like, I just. Sometimes I wonder about if I have like if I have a problem, because like I just like to move all the time. Unless I'm sitting down doing something productive, I have to be moving. That's why it's hard for me to do vacation time. So, but the thing is, the catch is, when you're doing a lot of driving, it's almost like when you're being a truck driver. When you drive a lot, what happens? You're going to get sleepy. So that's the catch. It's a lot of driving and whatnot. Like, for example, like we had a story in Pittsburgh, and for a couple of days a week we had to travel back and forth to Ohio because of the East Palestine, the derailment. I don't know if you heard about that story.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So we had to drive back and forth to that, and apparently we were going to be doing that for about a year, because apparently the pollution was so bad, which it's still there to this day, and we're going to be doing a story about that for quite a while. So that's the only catch. But I love traveling. I love it. Because I remember, like, when I would be in the office, not as I said, I ain't going to lie, like, I was, like, you know, I was, like, sometimes, like in the morning, I would edit from 3 a.m. all the way to, like, 7 or 8 a.m. And then the rest of those hours,
mm-hmm.
I would just chill because there was nothing else to really do. So I utilized that time to, like, write stories, write scripts, you know, to do stuff that are outside work, or I would just like just relax. That was the beauty about being an editor. You also have downtime, and you can have breaks anytime you want. As long as you finish your work, we have a cafe upstairs. You're allowed to, like, you know, take a breather. And that's what I like about working for the news. You're allowed to take breaks anytime you want, as long as you get the work done. And you're basically your own boss. So it's almost like being a freelancer, except you're working for someone. So that's the beauty about working for the news. The catch about it is that, like, you have to realize that when you work for the news, what do you see on the news? It's a lot of times homicide, fires, accidents. So you have to prepare yourself mentally, which they told me that beforehand. I'm not dogging on them or downing them. They tell you that beforehand because it's the news. It's what sells on the news, so they can't help that. But there are some good stories. There are some good stories, but a lot of times, you know, a lot of times they're like, eh, but, you know, but a lot of times, you know, it's not the brightest stories. But it's what sells for the news, so they can't help it.
So. Well, of course. I mean, and the good stories sell too, but the other kind sells more. So,
right, it lets you know what's going on in the world. And the thing is, like, what interests me is that I never was one to watch the news because of that. But ever since working for the news, when you work for any news station, it helps you open up what's really going on in the world. Like half the stories I'd be seeing, it's like you would never think that half of the stuff really exists out in the world, but there are strange things that really happen, and it's just unfortunate. But it's not like Area 51 where it's like hush hush, but it's just unfortunate. It helps you realize how humanity really is, you know, and how we're slowly changing. Like, for example, it's sad, like, even today, which I'm not against hating anyone, but it's sad that you can't even say a hello, or, because back in my time, because I'm from the 90s, what would you do? You say hello to someone, and they smile back. But today, it's like you can't even do that anymore. It's like you say hello to someone, and it's just, they look at you funny and don't respond back. Or you can't say yes, ma'am, or yes, sir anymore, because people can get offended these days because of, I don't need to explain that. Everyone already knows what that's about. But it's just sad because how much we're so, it's not what it used to be. I know I probably sound old saying that, even though I'm not, but it's just weird how the world is now. So.
Well, I'm 63. Now, granted, obviously, there's people older than me. But being a child of the 60s, because I was born in 60, so I'm a child of the 60s, and it was a lot worse back then. Sometimes when things are changed, it's for the better, but there's something else that has to give. It's a give and take. You can't, like, completely change something and then not have to give away something else. Because, like, when I went to school, the teacher was always right, always. The kid was never believed, ever. If the kid said, they hit me, then, did you hit him? No. Okay, then you weren't hit. The kid was never believed. And now, they are the complete opposite. They believe everything the kid says. And never believe the teacher. And then the teacher's just getting beat up. And they're trying to say, well, this kid beat me up. Did you beat up the teacher? No. Okay, you didn't get beat up. It's like completely switched. But at the same time, it's kind of a good thing because kids were getting beat up by the teachers. That wasn't in the news or anything because it was all hush-hush. Because even myself, I didn't get beat up by a teacher. However, I had a teacher that got mad at me and grabbed me by the back of the neck, by my head.
Oh, my God.
And shook my head, you know, jerked my head. And my glasses went flying across the room.
Oh my
and
gosh, that's
nothing childish. Yeah, and nothing legally happened to the guy. Nothing. Because
and you walked away with bruises?
Oh yeah, I had even had bruises on my face from where my glasses were.
And that wasn't enough?
It's
face. Not like you did that yourself. Wow.
and nothing happened to him at all. Nothing. Except he got he got threatened by my father, but but I mean, as far as getting in trouble at school, no, because the principal said that the teacher had the right to instill discipline in the room, and but the guy wasn't saying what he did. He made it sound completely different. And when they called my dad in, and my dad wasn't even a good man. He was a terrible person. However, he didn't like being called in. That was actually more of what it was. He didn't like being called in. He really didn't care that much about me. He just didn't like being called in. So they called him in and told him that I was being disrespectful to the teacher. And so then my dad, what'd you do? And so I told him. And which, it, you know, it was nothing. The reason why he got mad was because I knew more about something than he did. I corrected him, and he didn't like it. And so that's why he did that. And my dad, when I told him that, he looked at the guy. He said, "What? You got mad at my kid because she's smarter than you?" And he's like, "I did not." And then he's trying to argue with my dad. My dad is the type of was the type of person you don't want to argue with. And the reason why my dad knew that I was telling him the truth is because I would be afraid to lie to him. And because, like I said, he wasn't a good man. He would beat you for nothing, let alone if you lied to him. So... no, I didn't lie to him, obviously. And so then he went up to that teacher, and he said, "How about if I jerk you by the back of the head and see how you like it?" And he says, "I'll tell you what," because the principal refused to do anything. He said, "Tell you what, if my kid ever tells me something like this ever happens again, I'll come in and I'll beat you both up." And he pointed at the teacher and the principal. And he said,
"Well,
if you don't think I can't," and he said he'd take them both on at the same time. And he wasn't just blowing smoke, because he was a captain in the United States Army, and he literally knew how to kill somebody.
I got it.
Yeah, and he would make sure that he told him that I know how to kill somebody with one finger. And yeah, he sounded like he was just bragging. But he actually did know how to kill somebody with one finger. So because he was a kook and he was crazy and he always got up into people's faces, nobody was going to take him up on it to try to fight him. So they were like, and then they never called him again to come in. but that's the kind of thing that I mean that, so at least it's not like that anymore.
No, things got a lot more better, and now they actually listen to people in general of what's really going on in the school system, because a lot of times it's true, and people, children get abused, and you can't allow teachers to get away with this, and now they can go on trial and, you know, have a voice. You know, back then, I'm judging by what you're saying, students in general didn't have a voice, or kids in general didn't have a voice, and...
no,
child
not
of,
at all.
It was considered discipline, you know. Now, you know, there's a difference between discipline and child abuse. There's a huge difference, and a lot of people now today, it's flipped around. It's like all over the place now. But as long as like kids do have facts behind them, and there are witnesses, just the same thing as adults do. So they have every right to get justice just as much as an adult does. So I'm glad that has changed today. Because if that was still going today, it's like, it would be crazy. So.
Yeah, because coming from that time, and it was even worse before I was a kid. It was even worse. So, you know, the farther back you go, the worse it was for kids. because at least when I was a kid, I wasn't, at least not legally, able to be forced to work.
Right.
You know, an eight-hour job. But yet, in the old days of my father, when he was a kid, the kids could be forced to work. And not just by the parents, they could be forced to work by anybody. Yeah, so can't do that anymore. So there's lots of things that are better. I'm not saying it's great, but it's a lot better. I would rather
It's a lot better than what it was before, yeah.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Because I would rather see what's going on now with kids than the way it was when I was a kid. Because I sure as heck wouldn't want to see some kid getting abused by a teacher and then nothing happened to him. I mean, yes, it still happens, but at least they get charged and they might go to jail, and a lot of them have gone to jail for the abuses. So. Well, I don't want to keep talking about that because, yeah, that could be a whole other show. So,
yeah, that's like a show itself.
Yeah, but you seemed interested, so I figure, well, I'll let you talk a little bit, and then I'll talk a little bit because it is.
Oh, no. No, I'm just a talker. That's all. No, I'm just a talker. Yeah. Like, well, especially when it comes to deep, like, personal stuff. Like, I've always been into that, so.
Well, that's good for, you know, being on a, basically what this is a talk show. But I did want to get to a couple of other things
okay.
before we get to the big thing, which you know what I'm talking about. I just don't want to say it before we get to it because then, well, we might as well talk about it then if I mention it.
I gotcha, man.
Yeah. So you studied graphic design at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. So what sparked your interest in graphic design, and have you loved it, like, since you were a kid?
So here's the thing. So actually, when I was a kid, when I was about in second grade, I actually wanted to be a marriage counselor. So that's how it originally started. Yeah, yeah. So a lot, yeah, I originally wanted to be a marriage counselor because my mom and dad didn't have a great relationship. It was a lot of domestic violence. I won't get too into that. Mm-hmm. But seeing that growing up, it's so sad because I grew up really quickly at a very young age, which I was forced to, unfortunately. But it made me think at the age of like 12 or 13 that
the last thing I want to do is see other kids suffer the way that I did.
You know, so when I was younger, it's like I didn't want them to go
through
what I went through. So I thought maybe it would be best to help other marriages to stay together. So that's what I originally wanted to do. And then when I went to I went to Westmore County Community College, and it was my freshman year, and I realized that it wasn't for me. You know, I enjoyed always listening to people and helping people. I always do it to this day. That's why if you watch any of my stuff or watch any of my stuff, anything I film, it's a lot of psychology. I've always loved psychology, but it wasn't for me. So the graphic design came from, you know, my big brother, he always was a drawer, and he stopped doing it now, but it got pushed on to me. And I've always loved to draw, and I've always was into drawing something every single day. Also, my father at the time, too, he was a drawer, too. And, you know, from that, I was also into computers. So I found out that I didn't know graphic design was a thing until 2013, 2014. And I got into that, so I went to different programs. I studied it, and I taught myself how to do it. And that's how I wanted to get into graphic design. And so I went from Westmore County Community College to IUP, and the thing is, like, do I regret the going to college? No. I met a lot of my friends. I'm still friends to this day, and I make good connections. But a lot of stuff that I learned in school, I taught myself. So that's why when it came to anything at Delaware Graphics, I was top of my class, and I was ahead of a lot of students. Not too far ahead, but I just knew what I was doing because I studied it. I just had the mindset that, like, when I was in community college, I made it a goal that I want to be able to learn all these programs before I entered into class, and I accomplished it. So a lot of times I would get done wickedly early, and I would have a lot of free time, except for the other classes mm-hmm. where I had to do painting and sketching, and when those took forever. But that's what happens when you're in art school. But then when I graduated, I was like, you know, I still loved it. Like, I tried to do freelancing. I did logos, illustrations. I remember I did, like, a logo for my town's art center, and it became a billboard on the side of the building where I did a banana split, I believe it was. It was a banana split day, time period. I forget what I have a photo of it, too. I just got to find out where it is. But it was showing up, and I was proud of myself. But the thing is, like, when I started to apply for jobs, because, you know, when you're being a freelancer, you struggle, especially when you're in graphic designs. That's the truth.
Right.
So I tried to apply for different jobs, and when I did, the pay was okay, but because when you're getting your feet wet, so it's not going to be the greatest, but, like, when I was trying to apply for jobs, I was looking at the work setting, because they gave you a tour each and every place, and I was like, when I went to school, art was about expressing yourself, a bunch of colors, seeing light, you know what I'm saying? But when mm-hmm. I went to the job places that where I'll be working, it was dark and low saturated, and I felt like I was going to be working in a dungeon. So mm-hmm. I was like, you know, if you want to go to the very creative places where I come from, where I came from at the time in Latrobe, we would have to go to, you know, New York or, you know, Cali, like where all the arts creative stuff is popping at. But unfortunately, mm-hmm. when you're out of college, not all of us have the money to be able to go over there. Cause that's when you have to move yourself over to those locations where it is highly needed over there. But I didn't have the money at the time. So I decided to go back to my day job, and, I was sad, you know, I didn't have a dime to my name. All I had was like $2. I was barely making any money. So I was like, what do I want to do in my life? It was about 2017 at the time. And I was alone and I had no friends. And it was around like October, November. No, it was around January or February because I graduated in December. So it was still kind of cold out. So I don't. Maybe March or April, whatever. I know it was cold outside, and it was late at night. And I was walking in this streetway that I'd never seen before in Latrobe. It was where a lot of high-class people live. I've never walked down there. And I was walking, and I saw, like, out a window that, like, there was this happy family. And it's like, I want that because I grew up in a very different household where, like, you know, when you grow up with an autistic kid, it's not the brightest thing in the world, because that's why I had to grow up quickly, because I had to help my mom a lot of times. I take the dad role. I had to help my mom take care of, his name is Quinte, take care of Quinte and whatnot.
Oh.
And so, like, but at that time, like I couldn't even grow up. I couldn't grow up like a normal person. Of course, I did activities. Yeah, I did activities outside the home and whatnot, but when I went home, it wasn't normal. So seeing that family being happy, I was like, that's what I want, and that's what I want for my future. So when I walked out of that, I couldn't afford anything. It was Scotty G's. That's what it was. I went to Scotty G's, and I got myself a $2 hot dog meal, hot dog and fries, and, like, I was eating, and I was wondering, like, I was eating on a bench, that's what it was, and I was wondering to myself, what do I want to do for the rest of my life? Because I can't live my life in this toxicity, and I was so depressed. But then I remember back when I was in high school, I was doing broadcast and production with Mrs. Hauk. I'll never forget that teacher. And we were just having so much fun making films, little videos. And then I remember, like, when I used to be a performer on stage and when I used to do music. And then I remember when I was back in IEP, where I was saying, like, I don't regret going to college because I met good friends where I got to be on IEP TV on Back to the Drawing Board. So I was like, I remember making films growing up as a kid and doing YouTube videos, and it was so much fun. So then I came across when it was a school, at the online school at the time. It was called Life Film School, and I paid a little fee for it, and it was just online reading and teaching how to do film. But what they have was music video production, and I was like, hey, I love making music, and I love making films, or love film. Mm-hmm. Why not give it a shot? And so when I was studying that course, we had an assignment to do, well, a music video. And so I came across a band. Well, they were called 3 of Infinity at the time. They changed their name now, but they were called 3 of Infinity at the time. And I got to do their, I met up with them at Starbucks, and I was like so nervous, I didn't know what to do. But I planned a day for us to do a music video. But the day of the music video, ironically, I broke my hand somehow. I have no idea how, but it broke. But thankfully, through the grace of God, my mom found a sprain in her closet. How it got in there, I have no idea. But she got me a sprain for my hand. And I used the little money that I had from Dunkin' Donuts. That was my day job. And I bought myself a gimbal, an old Nikon that had no autofocus. And I just went with it. And so I shot the music video, and with one hand, barely was able to focus it, and it turned out great. And I got an A on my assignment, and so, like, that was all I had. And I used that video to mark myself everywhere so that way I can be seen somehow. And then all of a sudden,
right,
I get a phone call when I was going to my friend's house from First Angel Media saying that they're doing a live show for a band called Tropedelic. And I was pitched to shoot for them. And at the time, I didn't know how to price myself. So I charged $80. I'm never doing that again. $80. And it was my first live show. And I was so freaking nervous. To the point where I actually have a video went on YouTube. To the point where you see the lead singer of the band pointing his finger at me to come on stage. And I ran on stage. And I saw a wave of people. And I was like, this is so much fun. And may I add, it was drizzling that day too. It was raining a bit, but it was so much fun. And I was jumping off the stage, literally. I have a habit of doing that a lot. I was jumping off the stage, aiming at the band, she getting different freaking angles, and it turned out great. And I was like, when I saw that wave of people, it reminded me of when I was younger, when I got to perform on stage and how I love shooting films, like shooting films and whatnot. And I was like, I want to do this for the rest of my life. So after that, I got into shooting concert photography, anything with the camera, concert photography, portraits, music videos, recap videos. And then even at the time, I even started a podcast because I wanted to learn what it was like to be an entrepreneur. So what I did is I had to be unique because I did my own schooling. So I had a podcast called Be Unique where I interviewed people who had unique lifestyles so that I could understand what it's like to work for yourself. And that information helped me to form Fennell De La Cruz Films, where now I shoot music videos, short films. I edit, like I taught everything myself. And that lockdown, that really helped because it helped me understand how to color grade and how to edit faster. And it's through the camera. If it wasn't for the camera, I probably would be dead, I swear, because that's how bad it was when I lived at home. But that camera, it helped me get my first car, because I didn't have a car. It helped me buy my first car, which was a Scion IQ 2013, and now I have a Chevrolet Trax 2020, so I bought my second car in 2021. And so now to this day, I work for Channel 4 with the camera. So it was the camera that really, really changed everything. But it's ironic, because I never thought I would love cameras, because I remember my brother was heavy into photography, and he still is, and I'll make fun of him for it, and now here I am being better than him, and now it's like I'm making a living off of my camera. So it's just funny how things work out, because I never thought I'd be doing this after, and I don't regret it.
Yeah, and you have your own film company, Fernando Del Rey,
yeah.
De La Cruz Films.
Yes.
but we are getting a little bit short on time because I wanted you to be able to talk about the big thing. So we've got like 24 minutes, but I didn't want to wait till like 15 minutes. I wanted you to have enough time to talk. So tell us about your new brand, Decadence of Umbra.
Ah, the Decadence of Umbra. So, yes. So that's, I was always into storytelling and writing stories all the time when I was younger. And I thought, why not give it a shot? Because, like, when you work for Channel 4, like I said earlier, you do have a habit of having night, it does affect you mentally. And so I had night terrors. And so my therapist told me that, you know, being creative it helps me mentally. So he was like, why not write about those things that you're dreaming about and turn them into stories? And I did. And so I started to write stories, and I read them to my girlfriend, Olivia De La Quilla, which, Olivia, if you're listening, hello, I love you. And so she was saying to me, you know, these remind me a lot of Stephen King. And, you know, people love Stephen King. He loves Goosebumps. Have you ever thought about, you know, opening your own book series? And I was like, I don't know. I mean, it would be worth a shot. And she was like pushing me. And I was like, you know what, why not? And I've always loved telling stories. Like, even if it's not film, I just love to tell stories. And so I was like, but I need to come up with a name. What's a good name? And I would come up with these stupid names that are all like, for example, like Frightmare stories. And I was like, nah, that's already taken. And so my girlfriend, she's an amazing chef. And so, like, she was like, well, why not do something with decadence? Like, why not make your stories? Because your stories always have a decadence. They're always very tasteful. Like, they're all a taste of horror. And I was like, whoa, say that again. And I was like, what about the decadence of darkness? And she's like, and then I was like, no. Then she taught me a word in Latin that's another way of saying dark. It's like the darkest part of the sun, which is umbra. And I was like, what about the decadence of umbra? And that's how the name began. And so now, right now, today, actually, there's going to be a new one coming out at 7 p.m. Called My Best Friend Alan. So what I've been doing is, like, I've been narrating and writing these stories. Now, I was doing it weekly, but then I learned, you know, the thing is, I'm writing these stories, but what I don't want to do is rush and not give them quality. You know, that's the thing that a lot of people mess up at. They rush, but then the quality goes down. We need to give them time. And also, you're a human being. You can't be putting all that pressure on yourself, and that's what I was doing. And so I was like, I need to stop. So now I'm doing it where I take my time on them, and then I release them, which I have another one in the works, which I'll release a trailer about it in a couple, like probably in a week. But I want to take my time on these stories because the thing is, when I'm writing these stories, I fill these characters, and these are characters, a lot of these stories, they happen in my life in general, but I turn them into stories or horror stories. And the thing is, I'm connecting with these characters that I write, and it's hard to let them go. It's like saying goodbye to a best friend. When I put this much effort into the stories, I want people to feel that same exact way. It's like when you read them and when it ends, I want you to be able to connect with them. Because I hate when horror films or horror stories are always about blood and gore. It's like you want to build up to that. For example, when you saw Stephen King's It, it did get to blood and gore, but you connect with each and every one of the characters. And then when it was over, it was like, oh, man, it's over. It's because you love the build-up. You love the connection that you had with the characters, and you hate it when their harm was happening to them. It's almost like they're a part of your family. That's what I want people to feel when they hear my stories, the same way I had to feel. So, yeah. So the Decadence of Umbra are original stories written by me and narrated by me. But right now I'm thinking of expanding it where I do want to get more voice actors, and I want to get more people involved in this because I can't do this all myself now. So right now I'm thinking about building a team. And in the future, the goal is to turn the Decadence of Umbra, since I'm a filmmaker, into a live series. So I also want to build a crew to film these stories and bring them to life. So.
Wow. And now you have a podcast on Spotify. Does it have the same name?
Yes.
Do you call it Decadence of Umbra?
Yeah, so if you want to listen to the stories of the Decadence of Umbra, they're both on YouTube and Spotify. But you can also follow my other social medias, which is on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram. But to listen to the stories, you have to go to YouTube and Spotify.
Okay. So the listeners know that now. And one thing I did want you to get to also. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you going to say something else about the Decadence of Umbra?
No, no.
Because I know that that's a big thing.
Okay. No.
I just didn't want to, like, stop you from saying something if you wanted to.
No,
but there was something else that I wanted you to make sure to mention. Going back to the graphic design, now you have a portfolio. If you want to tell the listeners where they can go to online to see your portfolio.
Yes, actually, yes. So I do a lot of film work. And so if you would like my services, you can go online and go to www.naildelacruzfilms.com and you can check out my portfolio. I do cinematography, photography, and I do graphics. But when it comes to the graphics, well, I do a lot of film, so I do a lot of posters. But if you need a logo, I could do that too. But I basically base my brand off of film. So if you need a music video, recap video, or need a promo, or need someone to shoot your film or help you edit, I'm the guy to go to. I got your back. You can follow me. You can contact me on FernandoCruzFilms.com. And click the contact me, and boom, shoot your message. Or you can contact me on FernandoDeLaCruzFilms@gmail.com or Facebook, because, you know, that phone is always stick to me. I'm always quick to answer. If you have any questions, you can contact me on Facebook as well.
Cool. I mean, I know this information, but, of course, obviously I want it for the listeners.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I'm starting to lose my voice a little bit. So
you're
just so that people know, they can look for you under your name, Fernando De La Cruz, and correct me if I'm wrong when I do it, but it's spelled FERNANDO, D-E,
yes.
And then separated, L-A, and then separated, C-R-U-Z.
Yes.
Because some people
films.
Like to put the...
together. Yeah, but the thing is, like, when you put it in the search bar, you kind of have to put it together because, like, it's not going to come up on the web browser, but either way, you'll be able to find it.
Well, yeah, yeah. But, well, the reason why I specify is that way they'll know what they're looking at, though, because when it comes up with several different things that they can click on, they'll know that,
yeah.
Well, if the DE and LA are together, that's not you.
Right.
So, and then, of course, it has your picture. And but, of course, they might not know what you look like. But they'll be able to find you.
Yeah. Just look for the – if you see a photo of me, it's me in the leather jacket. So.
Well, because one of the main things I do on this show, because really that's why I originally started, was to help my friends – talk about their whatever they have going on, and that way they can get people, you know, interested and get it out there. Now, granted, I don't have a big audience, but it's bigger now than it was, and people have had quite a few listens on the recorded versions, and I always know when people are listening on the live version, like now. And lots of times there won't be anybody listening for the live version, but then there will be lots of listens for the recorded version. And one of the most listened to episodes I had, and this is really odd considering that I'm in the movie section, but I've had more than just movie people, but I had to put myself somewhere. So I figured, well, because most of the guests I'm going to have are going to have something to do with the film industry. So that's why I'm in movies.
Right.
But I had a councilman from New York on my show. And his show is my most listened to episode And it's because he was talking about homeless people, which shows you that a lot of people actually care about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and now I'm not, you know, promising anything, and I'm, you know, not saying that, ooh, I'm going to help you somehow. But there have been a few guests that said after they were on my show, they had people contact them, and one person, and it was so cute because he was so excited because he was, like, mm-hmm. new to the business, and he was so excited because views and his visits to his site doubled overnight after being on my show.
Oh, that's so cool.
And he was, yeah, and he was so excited. And one of the reasons why he was so excited was because he was so nervous. And so, of course, I'm reassuring him before the show. So I'm like, yeah, with me, it's like, no, there's no reason to be nervous with me. It's just, we're just going to be chatting. You'll even forget that you're live. Because he's like, oh, I don't know if I can do live. Just don't even think about it. It's like, just talk. Once you start talking, you'll forget you're live. Take my word.
Right. It's like having a conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, we're just going to be talking, and it's not going to be
right.
like how some people do interviews, because I think that's what he was afraid of, that he was going to be like only have a certain amount of minutes for questions, and because that's how some people structure their shows, you know, and that's fine to them, but I'm not like that. It's laid back, and I go with the flow of the guest. And since all guests
mm-hmm.
are different, not all of mm-hmm. my shows work the same way because I go with the flow
right.
of the guest. I don't make them follow my flow. And he said that I was right. He actually forgot that he was live and that he felt so comfortable. And he was just so happy. And he's like, oh, because he had never done any kind of interview at all. Let alone be live. That's why he was so nervous. I was like, oh, it's so sweet when he told me that. He just, you know, I didn't ask him. He just popped into my Facebook and told me that. But so my point is that I may help you. I hope I help you. But sometimes you never know.
Right.
I'm sorry? 'Cause sometimes you don't know. Because not everybody
right.
will come to me and tell me anything, or you may not hear about it, even though that's where they heard you. They may not tell you that. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Because, like, if they say, well, you know, I heard about you somewhere, they might not say where they heard about you from. I mean, usually people will, but, you know, I can't guarantee that, of course. But hopefully.
Right.
People will be listening, and I will let you know, like, in a couple of days how many exactly, because I don't like to do that, but I'll tell you it's a decent number. And I just did that with one of my previous guests. I just contacted him because on Facebook, and I told him that he had quite a few listens on the recorded version, and of course it made him excited. So it's like obvious, if there's more than just a few listens, that obviously means that somebody listened to it and then they passed on to other people that they knew that, they, hey, I listened to this and you should listen to it. And so then they listened to it and then they pass on to other people. And that, according to, not just according to him, but he's one of the big proponents of it. Jason Delzell, network. So that's one of the big reasons why I have this show, to help my friends to network.
Right.
So now that we're down to like 10 minutes, and I mean, we've pretty much gone over everything that I had on my outline. But if there's anything that you want to talk about right now, and it doesn't have to be movie-related or work-related or anything, just if there's something that you want to talk about for a few minutes, feel free to do so.
The only thing I can really say right now is what I want. I can say what I'm thinking about right now last, but what I really want to talk about is a lot of times people in the creative world, they feel afraid to speak out and speak their mind. You know, recently there was an incident where my girlfriend spoke her mind about what was going on, what's the reality like of being in the indie film industry. And because of that, she got it backlashed on her when all she was doing was telling the truth. And people have a habit of taking things small and making it bigger than what it really is, to the point where it's like you can't even speak. And it's unfortunate because, like, when you're a creator, that's what you're doing. You're doing something you love and you want to be able to express yourself. But now we can't, because if it's the truth, don't sit back and tell a lie, because and crucify them when all they're doing is telling what they love or they're telling the truth. If you feel, anyone who's listening, if you feel that you need to speak out, never let anyone tell you otherwise, because you are a human being. You're not garbage. You're not dirt to be walked on or a carpet. You're a person. So if you feel you need to speak out and tell your truth or whatever it is that you want to express, never let anyone tell you you shouldn't be doing it. You should be. And in this world, you're going to be hearing that a lot because of today's left of cancel culture. You're going to be hearing people that are very clicky and saying, oh, you need to join my side. You need to join this. You need to join that. Oh, you're saying this about me. They're going to do anything that they can to make you stop. They're going to do anything, because that happened to me. I'm not going to lie. Like, there was incidents that happened in the film industry, indie film industry, and it made me not even, like, it made me wonder about film anymore. But did it stop me? No, because at the end of the day, you're going to hear that. At the end of the day, you know who you are, and you know your truth. So never let anyone, no matter what field you're in, tell you that you're something that you're not. Because you are a person, you have a voice, and you have every right to speak everything you have to say. Now, I would see if you're, like, doing something, like, if it's, like, way out there where it's, like, you're almost hurting someone, okay. But either way, if you have something to say or you want to let out something, say it. Do not shut yourself off or mute yourself, because all you're going to do is hurt yourself. So never keep it all inside. Because I've seen that happen. I only say this because that's the reality. When it's like in, I can't say a lot, but there's a lot of things in the film industry or anything in the creative field in general. Like even my one friend Santos, the same thing happened to him. He's a YouTuber, and all he did was speak his mind, and all of a sudden they backlashed on him, and now he lost half of the YouTuber people that he collaborated with over speaking the truth when it wasn't even wrong. You see what I'm saying? And so, like, it's sad because, like, yeah. in today's creative food, you can't speak. You can't speak what's on your mind or what's really happening, because if you do, you get crucified or you get shut out or canceled. When that's a shame, it shouldn't be like that. We have the right to have a freedom of speech, and we have the right to say what we want to say. So who are you to tell me what I can or cannot say? And then when we do, it's like we're the criminal, you know? And that's what I want a lot of people to understand, that never let anyone tell you otherwise. Now, there's that. And for those who are listening and would love to also, like, if you would love to hear my stories, if you would like to hear my stories, you can follow me on The Decadence of Umbra on Spotify and YouTube. But the thing is, I tell horror stories, and these are stuff that are personal for people to connect with as well. Just because stories are horror doesn't mean they can't bring people together, because my goal is not to scare people or harm. It's not that at all. Of course, that's what stories do when they are in that genre. But if you see in the movie theaters, they bring people together, and that's what I want to do. So if you would like to listen to my stories, you can listen to them. Make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube and follow me on Spotify. And like I said, if you have something to say, make sure you speak. Because no one can never let anyone shut you off. speak.
Okay, I just left the pause there because I wanted to make sure you were done talking.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I left the pause
words.
And I was like, okay, that's it.
Yeah, those were some great words. And, yeah, I hope people take them to heart. And I just wanted to add in there, not that I'm trying to argue with you, please don't take it that way, but unfortunately, mm-hmm. it's actually always been like that. That it's
yeah.
just that they give those things names now, cancel culture. Okay, whatever. That
well, yeah, I agree with that.
No, like I said, I'm not trying to argue with it. However, it's even more so now because of the social media that makes everything
yes,
more accessible
right.
to everybody.
Right.
That's why it appears like it's actually something new when it's not. I mean, I know that you know it's not new, but there are some people that think it's new. And I'm like, no, that's
mm-hmm.
not new. That just like some of the styles of clothes. Oh, well, you know, this is new. No, that's not new. We were wearing those in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
But when people are young, you know, they're stupid because they don't know things. Well, it's true. I used to be stupid.
Oh, no, I understand. Like bell bottoms. And people are like, oh, those
yeah.
are so new. No, those are back in the 70s. They're just coming back. Or the bucket hats. They're coming back
yeah.
again, but those are from like the 90s or 80s. So I get what you're saying.
Yeah. yeah. Because the reason why I brought that up is I had somebody say that to me. They were talking about their new bell bottoms and that's a new fashion. I'm like, no, that's not new. I was wearing those in the 70s. That's nothing new.
right.
And really, there's nothing new. It's just like, you know, reworked and everything. And I remind people of that when they watch films and they go, oh, well, that's a copy of this and that's a copy of that. Like, no, it's not a copy. It's similar. And you're never going to have
right.
anything new, no matter what
right.
it is. Because at least half of the movies that are made are based somewhat on Shakespeare. And he has been, not him, but his works have been around for centuries. So that's nothing new. If
right.
you do a Romeo and Juliet type movie, well, it's not new because that was done in the 1500s. But the reason why I do that is not to poke fun at people or anything, but because those are the haters. When people make their films and they want to throw all this hate at them. And
right.
We've only got like a minute and a half left, so I just want to say really quickly that, you know, as being a semi-professional movie reviewer, I give them an automatic one star just for making the film, the effort.
Right.
So I'm going to stop with that because I want to leave the last minute and about 10 seconds to you for anything else that you want to say in the last minute.
Yes. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for having me. Make sure to like and subscribe and follow me. Follow the Decadence of Umbra on all social media platforms and Fernando Cruz Films on all social media platforms. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a good time.
Aw, thank you. I'm glad. That is actually one of my hopes when people come on is that they have a good time. To me, that's like the second most important. The first most important is getting you out there and having people hear about your new projects and stuff. So like my guest, Fernando de la Cruz said, check out Decadence of Umbra and all of his social media. Contact him if you're interested in seeing any of his work or maybe hiring him for something. And so Fernando, I want to thank you so much once again for being on the show. And I want you to have a good night. Well,
thank you
day,
as well.
Rather.
You as well.
I'm so used to doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm so used to doing night shows. Sorry.
Right. I thank you so much for having me, and you have yourself a good night as well.
Okay. Thank
or
you.
Day.
Bye.
Or day. Yeah.
Bye.
Right. Ciao.
yeah. Ciao.